subheading, and its number is 666. The coming crash of the present system will serve as the pretext for implementing an earth-wide totalitarian regime. The 13th chapter of Revelation foretells that after the beast is revived from its death stroke, the image of the beast comes to life so as to cause to be killed all those who would not in any way worship the image of the wild beast. To date, none of Jehovah's Witnesses, nor anyone else for that matter, have been martyred or persecuted for refusing to bow before the United Nations. Clearly, neither the Anglo-American power nor the United Nations has sought to coerce all of mankind into recognizing their authority. At some point, however, under critical circumstances far beyond the scope of any previous crisis, the United Nations stands poised to become the eighth king of prophecy, imposing its rule to the extent that it puts under compulsion all persons that they should give these a mark in their right hand or upon their forehead, and that nobody might be able to buy or sell except a person having the mark. The scripture goes on to say, "Here is where wisdom comes in. Let the one that has intelligence calculate the number of the wild beast, for it is a man's number, and its number is 666. In further confirmation that Judgment Day will involve the idolization of a political image, Isaiah 41:1-5 echoes the prophecy of Revelation concerning the sword stroke upon the beast. The first verse reads, "Attend to me in silence, you islands, and let national groups themselves regain power. Let them approach. At that time, let them speak. Let us come up close together for the judgment itself." What are the circumstances under which Jehovah calls the national groups together for the judgment itself? Apparently, Jehovah's allowance for the national groups to regain power coincides with the wild beast returning from the abyss. So Jehovah is speaking to the nations during Judgment Day. Without question, Jehovah's calling the nations to judgment is a fear-inspiring development. But just how the national groups were gathered for the judgment in 1914, as the Watchtower teaches, is anyone's guess. The Watchtower offers no explanation. While it is evident that Cyrus, whom Jehovah refers to as his anointed liberator, serves as a pattern for Christ during the parousia, the similarities between the warrior Christ of Revelation and Cyrus being obvious, the application to 1914 is dubious at best. For example, Isaiah 41:2 states, "Who has roused up someone from the sunrise, who proceeded in righteousness to call him to his feet, to give before him the nations, and to make him go subduing even kings, who kept giving them like dust to his sword, so that they have been driven about like mere stubble with his bow." In view of the Watchtower's interpretation of the preceding verse, what evidence is there that Christ subdued the kings of the earth in 1914? Frankly, there is none. The nations have continued on as they have pleased since the time when Christ was supposed to have subdued them with his figurative bow and sword. Isaiah's prophecy also parallels the making of an image of the beast in the vision of Revelation, in that after God calls the nations to judgment, the terrified national groups busy themselves fabricating and venerating a crude idol. Isaiah 41:5-7 states, "The islands saw and began to fear. The very extremities of the earth began trembling. They drew near and kept coming, and they went helping each one his companion, and one would say to his brother, 'Be strong.' So the craftsman went strengthening the metal worker, the one doing the smoothing out with the forge hammer, him that is hammering away at the anvil, saying regarding the soldering, 'It is good.' Finally, one fastened it with nails, that it could not be made to totter." Seeing that there are unmistakable similarities between the prophecy of Isaiah and Revelation, specifically with regards to the nations fabricating what amounts to an idol in response to a traumatic global event, and that through Isaiah, Jehovah specifically calls the nations to come up close for the judgment itself, it should be apparent that the establishment of the United Nations in 1945 simply could not have initiated Judgment Day. Furthermore, contrary to what Jehovah's Witnesses presently believe, the downfall of the Seventh World Power and the emergence of the Eighth King is a sequential event. Expressed differently, the sword stroke upon the seventh head of the beast is what gives rise to the Eighth King. Moreover, the Eighth King has not yet begun to rule. Since the Eighth King springs from the Seven, evidently the Anglo-American King not only breathes life into the image and commands the world to worship the image, but the Seventh King also takes a back seat to his Frankenstein-like creation. The present ongoing global financial collapse gives us some inkling of how the present governmental system may be brought down and replaced by a form of global communism. In that way, everyone on Earth would be brought into a situation that no one could buy or sell without acknowledging the image of the beast. The 1 hour allotted to the Eighth King coincides with the hour of test Jesus referred to in the third chapter of Revelation, where he promised the faithful, "Because you kept the word about my endurance, I will also keep you from the hour of test, which is to come upon the whole inhabited earth, to put a test upon those dwelling on the earth." The test that is coming upon the world will force all men to demonstrate their allegiance, either to Satan's miraculously resuscitated political beast or to Jehovah's kingship. That is when the angel announces to the world, "Fear God and give him glory, because the hour of the judgment by him has arrived. And so worship the one who made the heaven and the earth and the sea and the fountains of waters."